cliffcentral.com.
I saw Bastille live once. One of three bands I think I've seen live. Not much of a music goer.
No.
I never know what to do at concerts. I mean, I'm not the kind of guy who's just going to dance. I definitely clap my hands a lot. So you end up just standing there watching people on the stage.
In which case you could have just, you know, stayed at home and watched your DVD.
Look, I like your music. It's on my playlist. All right, so into the second hour we go. We've got lots of messages to get to, but we have to hang on to that. So I'm not ignoring your messages. Just hang with me. We've got Justice Malala on the phone.
Yeah.
We've got to get through the rest of those Americans who are leaving. We've got other messages about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, we've got so much to get into, but I actually got words to have with Justice Malala. But first, sorry, I'm actually building up. This is getting quite personal for me.
That's fine. That's
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
Indeed. Justice, are you with us this morning?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm okay. Justice, you are. We noticed you're not here.
You both sound down. You both sound like, oh, no, it's the end of the world or something like that.
Justice. I'm going to let Ben lead here because he's actually the one with the issue. Go ahead, Ben.
Justice, it's not the end of the world, but we just want to know where we stand with you. You know, you're in and out. In the beginning of this relationship, you were here all the time. You were on time. You stayed late. You know, there was smiles. You were looking fresh. Now it's, oh, guys, sorry, I'm in Cape Town.
Yeah, I'm in PE.
You know what? And that was fair, Justice, because you're a man in demand. So when you say, I'm in Cape Town, there's Parliament, we go, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Justice, you know what? That's you. This week, however, you're telling us you're in PE?
And the waves are great here, you know?
Yeah, see, now, Justice, is there someone else? Because nothing happens in PE. For a man of your expertise, nothing is there for you.
Justice, Ben is basically feeling very neglected here, and he just wants some of your attention. I mean, that's what this is about.
Ben, you know what?
Yeah, see, my buddy, hesitation. I told you there was someone else.
There's something going on. What's the Elvis song? We can't go on together with suspicious minds.
Well, Justice, let me lay this out to you. Who's making it suspicious? It's not me. Alrighty, but let's get into it. So obviously all the focus right now is on the America. But you know, we always like to get to know that our issues are not going to be neglected. So what's happening here?
Yeah, I saw a nice tweet yesterday by Jeremy Clarkson, who retweeted, somebody asked the question, why did Trump win? And Clarkson's response was, my guess is because people voted for him. But this is exactly it, isn't it, Justice? As people are trying to decipher and figure out how it is that Donald Trump won that election.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know what? You know, I think you remember in July we spoke about Brexit and what it meant, and why did people vote to leave the UK, to leave the EU, and essentially build a bit of a lager in the UK. And I think the issues are pretty similar with this election in the US. What we've seen are people increasingly dissatisfied, if you will, with the establishment. You've seen people increasingly saying, no, this globalization business is not so good. People are taking our jobs. People are coming in from other countries and they're doing this and so forth. And Donald Trump essentially ran on that ticket. When he started his campaign, you'll remember Nigel Farage, who's the UKIP leader in the UK, which is quite a right-wing organization, was one of the first people to arrive and say, I'm here to help Donald Trump. I'm here to do this and that for him. And you've seen a lot of those leaders come through. And I think this is just the beginning of a wave of political change across the world. I think the world is going to become meaner, is going to become more inward-looking. I think that you're going to see an America that really, in its foreign policy, in its dealings with the world, will be all about me, and forget the plight of Africa, forget the plight of other nations. I think we're seeing a sea change in global politics. Many of us on this continent have essentially known the U.S. to be a defender of human rights, and we've received aid for countries that have struggled in the past. I think all that is going to come to an end. I think the U.S. is going to demand that countries like Kenya and so forth take responsibility for some of the security challenges, whether it's Al-Shabaab and other terror groupings on the continent. I think it's going to be a very different world. But I think Europe and the West are shutting down, are becoming more inward-looking, are becoming more insular. And I think next year when the French go to vote, when the Germans go to vote, don't be surprised when we see a right-wing leader emerge there, someone who pushes the line pretty much like Donald Trump, that says all our faults are because we have foreigners on our land, and so let's shut down the border. I think that's where we're going.
People are already kind of talking about this new world order, which is obviously a nice thing to say because it makes you sound like you're very intelligent. But I mean, it's kind of how it works in politics, isn't it? We definitely see trends like that. And if something happens in America, the ripples are very far seen.
Yeah, but I think what is concerning for me is what it says about security around the world. If you think about it, the kind of ideas that are floating around are the kinds of ideas that floated around in the run up to the Second World War. You had a world that was economically under pressure. You had countries essentially very susceptible to people who would arrive and say, "I will give you the solution," and the fault lies with the Jews or the foreigners or the immigrants and so forth. And I think some of the drums we're hearing now that are being beaten by people like Nigel Farage in the UK or Marine Le Pen in France sound very similar. It's almost like, whoa, we've been here before, and we seem to be going back there. So, yeah, you know, we all like to pronounce that, oh, it's the beginning of a new global order. But I think there is something to be concerned about for all of us. The idea of building a more caring society, a more caring world, I think is one that is on the back foot right now.
Sorry to interject, Justice. I didn't actually see or read Trump's speech yesterday, but I did see people commenting on, oh, you know, he almost came across as human and he wasn't as brash, you know, speaking about unity for a change. And
yeah.
I mean, is it not important also for us not to get carried away, you know, with the supposed threats that Trump made while campaigning? If he wanted to execute all of those threats, he would need support to do so, right? He can't just do it on his own.
Donald Trump's speech was, as many said, almost presidential. It was open, it was forgiving. It was, let's move on. You almost thought, what's going on here? Has he changed? My beef is that basically you have a situation where he made all these grand promises and threats and all sorts of other things. All of them essentially that, you know, he's going to change the world and change the U.S. And he's made the pledge that he's not going to wait for 100 days to do all these things. He's going to do them all within, within a day of coming to power. He's going to go in there and sign essentially almost erase, Barack Obama's legacy. And your question about, you know, should we not get carried away? My view is that it's very good to be presidential today, the day that you win. But when the pressure mounts, it's 4 years in office, and the pressure begins to mount, I think the real Donald Trump, Donald Trump, who we saw when he was cornered about his attitude to women, his attitude Black people, attitude Mexicans, I think that Donald Trump will return. I don't think he was a ploy. I don't think that he was. I think that he will come back and come back talking. And that's when you will see the real Donald Trump re-emerge. I think this period is one of conciliation, of let's work together and so forth. But I don't think it's going to last
Can I also just point out that speech that he made yesterday, that was a 70-year-old man talking at 3 in the morning. Obviously, he's going to be pretty nice and happy and comfy and stuff. I mean, if that election was on a Saturday at like 3 in the afternoon, you'd be guns blazing about, look out, Mexicans, here comes the wall. So, just
you're absolutely right. There is an element of that. You are tired. But, you know, I'm sure he's taken a bit of time to think about it. But the speech was prepared. I don't think I was that surprised that they won. A lot of people hadn't given them a chance. But I think, look, that speech was meant to at least bring together the American people and say, you know, the divisions of the past are this, and let's move on from that. And to a large extent, he did do that.
Well, Justice, the American elections have been, you know, a nice distraction for us here at home over the last day or two. But let's not forget what a lot of South Africans were focused on and wrapped up with just a few days ago, which was the state capture report and the result thereof of what's been happening. You know, former President Thabo Mbeki has written letters. Veterans have been speaking out. The ANC Youth League's Colin Maine has been saying all sorts of things about the public protector. Where are we now with regards to the reaction to the release of that state capture report and where we stand?
I think basically we are set for a... I think we are set for a long period of... a long period of contestation about that report. I think that we are going to see. I think essentially the fight is on, the battle is on, and that battle is going to continue for a long time to come. There are many who are essentially saying, you know, this means nothing. This is going to go nowhere, and many others who say, action needs to be taken. You should have seen yesterday there was an interfaith organization essentially saying Chilima Donsela under the bus, and that's what the ANC has been saying. For me, this is almost comical. I think the reaction of the ANC to this report puts us all in no doubt that the ANC is dying or dead, and that it doesn't know how to respond. It doesn't know how to even start to grapple with the problems that it has. So for me, I think what's going to happen is just it's diminishing returns for the party. It's going to get a walloping in 2019. And that walloping will continue, and I think the ANC will find itself out of power within the next 10 years. If this is the way it's going to respond to the challenges that it faces, I don't see how it has any chance whatsoever of keeping its base and convincing the base that it is serious about the fight against corruption or about delivery in general.
And then a day or two ago, Justice, one Twitter user by the name of Jean Leroux, he supposedly, you know, published a list of, you know, over 100 what he has called fake Twitter accounts that are supposedly being used to push the Gupta agenda and to discredit the former public protector, Chilima Donsela. Firstly, what do we know about Jean Leroux and, you know, the whole question of credibility and all of that? Should we just take his word for it?
I don't think we should. I think there is so much anecdotal evidence of sort of nefarious activity, if you will. I will tell you, you look at journalists only, and I don't know if it's happened to you guys, but there's been so much there have been so many hackings, if you will, of Twitter accounts, for example. There's been so much fake accounts set up so that push a particular line. For me, it's not a surprise at all when I start to see the evidence that is compiled. I think that it just adds up to the narrative of creating not even evidence about, oh, Philip Jonas did this or did that.
There was that doorbell prior to us losing that connection with
like
Justice.
It's,
you know, it's always okay. Justice,
you back?
We lost you there for a second, Justice. Can you hear us? Yeah.
Yes. I'm saying it adds on to that whole narrative that says, oh, this isn't about just the issues. There's a war on this family and on certain people. And that those people are black, and those people are people who are disrupting white monopoly capital, as it's called these days. But at the end of the day, I'm not surprised by these kinds of initiatives. I just think that, if you are involved at all in the kinds of things that the public protector says this family is involved in, there is no doubt in my mind that there's going to be a big, big fight to keep these proceeds of crime intact and to continue to lose. So that battle, that fight is one that I'm not surprised by. I think that we will continue to see these kinds of pushbacks. We'll continue to see that kind of fightback that we've seen lately with these Twitter accounts and so forth and so forth. And I think it will go through until the nuclear deal is done and dusted. My view is that that's really the big prize in this battle that's going on.
All right, so Justice, where to from here? If we look at if we focus particularly on the opposition parties, because I don't know, it seems to me as if maybe they're running out of options with regards to how to contain the situation. Yes, more and more people have hopped onto the bandwagon, calling for the president to step down. But, as far as the opposition are concerned, another motion of no confidence in parliament for the president. We've seen this happen quite a number of times before with no real success.
Yeah, and no chance of success today either when the DA brings this motion. So I think one of the big debates that needs to be had by the opposition is this. It's what impact is the opposition, the South African opposition, making on an ANC that is sick and tired and that wants to an ANC that essentially isn't even in the battle, in the fight anymore. What's happening there? And so I think that, how shall I put it? I think that the opposition needs to find its voice and needs to think through how it does things, shall I say. At the moment, the tactics are tired. There's nothing new. There's nothing interesting in what I'm seeing. It's all sort of it's nothing new. It's nothing new. And I think what we faced with is an opposition that just raises a useless motion of no confidence that gets defeated. We have the EFF being thrown out of the house, and it's all same old, same old, same old. And that stuff has a sell-by date, and I think we are past that sell-by date.
But also, the ANC just knows how to counter that anyway. So it's like, okay, this week, motion no confidence. Okay, rally together, throw weight behind presidents, dismiss.
And so I think this is where some innovation, if you will, is needed on the part of the on the part of the opposition. We can't go on with the same old tactics, same old. It's boring now. It's boring, and it doesn't work. And so I think on the part of the opposition, they're going to have to do something. Otherwise, they are as irrelevant as the people that they oppose. There is nothing new in what we're seeing. And I think that's where the EFF and the DA need to start talking about what are we doing here? What's the point of what we're doing? And is there any way of doing it differently? But if they don't seize the moment, then we are stuck with an opposition that doesn't know what it's doing. And we're stuck with a ruling party that is too consumed by its own internal battles and essentially going nowhere.
Justice, you mentioned the EFF, and I suppose, you know, we can't avoid not talking about their commander-in-chief, Julius Malema. Earlier this week, he made a court appearance in Newcastle, you know, for telling some of his supporters that they should grab unoccupied land. After that court appearance, you know, he said some things that, you know, that were a little bit suspicious, talking about how, you know, there are no threat to white people just yet. Yeah, and, you know, now I see that the F.W. de Klerk Foundation, for example, you know, they're calling for a meeting with the South African Human Rights Commission to discuss the statements that Malema made. The FF Plus have spoken out about, spoken against his statements. I mean, is this another case of, you know, getting his, you know, putting his foot in it again for the commander-in-chief?
I do think that Julius Malema does, you know, I think it's interesting. Julius Malema has been, think about it, today Jacob Zuma has paid 7.8 million rand for that house in KwaZulu-Natal, right?
Yes.
Why did he pay? He paid because Julius Malema took him to court, to the Constitutional Court, and said, Baba, this house that you have doesn't belong to you, and the people of South Africa pay for it. And the public protector has ruled that you must pay some money, the undue benefit, and so just do it. So you have a situation here where he goes and uses the Constitution to achieve what he wants.
Mm.
But then the same Constitution that he's used to achieve what he wants is the Constitution that says, you can't take away people's land without paying for it. There is no law that allows people to just occupy other people's land. And so you have a Julius Malema who uses the Constitution to achieve his end, and at the same time wants to break that Constitution. So the contradiction here is that if Julius Malema and the EFF use the Constitution and say you must abide by the Constitution, this is what they say, Jacob Zuma, then surely they too must say, we will abide by the Constitution because we want you to abide by the Constitution. And yet, increasingly, we're seeing the EFF calling for land settlements, and I think the land question needs to be discussed. But exactly how long is this going to go on where you choose the path that you like in the Constitution, and then you just break the part you don't like? I can't choose that I like the law on this, and then I don't like that one, but I'll just break it. If I like the Constitution, if I believe in it, and I say I will uphold it, then surely even the bits that I like, I can campaign to have them changed, but I can't just defy the law like that. And I think that's the first thing about this court case with Julius Malema. It's, okay, Baba, you say you are a constitutionalist. You say Jacob Zuma must abide by the Constitution. Why is it that you don't abide by it? Why is it that you don't believe in it, seemingly? And I think that's the conversation that needs to be had here with Julius Malema. the other stuff about, you know, we are not calling for the slaughter of white people yet. I mean, I think that's typical Julius Malema populist, not even populist talk. It's Putin mouth. He's done this before. You remember from his history in the ANC, Youth League. He's always been, how shall I put it? He's always been someone who just says something and then goes around apologizing for it later. I think this is one of those. The sentiment is just unacceptable. But it's very Julius Malema, and you know, the populist leader has become very popular in our world these days, and there is no sense of responsibility. There's no taking of responsibility. And so there will, I don't think there'll be much to stop Julius Malema making more of these and apologizing and then making another one and apologizing.
But Justice, you almost get the sense that that's the EFF's game, though, in all, just to kind of get the attention, get the sort of groundswell behind them as a cause, is that they're also just cherry-picking their audiences with a different sort of topics. I mean, they're very much behind the state capture thing. It's all good and well, but then suddenly there's the march and there's the violence, and now it's this whole land grab thing. So it's you know, is that just going to be the nature of who they're going to be as a party forever and ever?
Well, I mean, that short term, yes, you will attack people and people will think, oh, you're great and do this. But it's not sustainable because people are going to start saying, well, you keep on saying this and then you go to another audience and you say that. And yeah. That, you know, you're not consistent. You're not true to who you are and what you say you stand for. That is the big, big challenge for the EFF. It's got to be consistent in its messaging, and at the moment, it's just not consistent. And I think that's a game that will, you know, it's diminishing returns for that party if it continues along that line. But you know, the point about the EFF is this: it contested elections in 2014. It got 6.35%. That 1.3 million people saying we support you. This is a constitutional democracy. 93% of people who voted in 2014 in national elections did not say we like Julius Malema or the EFF. They voted for other people. If the EFF wants land to be transferred to the hands of black people, that's a very legitimate demand. By all means, make the demand. But if you say I'm in the system, surely you must go and convince. There was something beautiful in what Barack Obama said yesterday. He said, in politics, you try to convince people, you lose, and you get up the next day and make the fight again to convince them, not to force them through violence or through occupation, but to convince them that I have the right recipe for this society. And I think that's where the contradiction with the EFF is. Is it going to try to use its argument, or is it going to, like pretty much what happened on campuses, and the EFF student command was involved. You had a situation where civil society is behind the call for free education, but the violence, the intimidation, the looting, has turned a lot of people against that. And I think this is where the EFF faces its own challenge as a party.
All right, Justice, well, we're gonna leave it there with much to think about there locally and abroad. Next week, are we going to see you here in studio?
When will I see you again?
Yes. Yes, I see what you see. You can acknowledge it now.
Admission
of guilt. There it is.
You know, Justice, we are heading into December, and a lot of relationships, you know, are brought to a complete halt at around this time of the year. So if you want to break up with us, you must just let us know, Justice. You know, we'll recover from the breakup
eventually.
No, I don't want you guys to have a bad Christmas. Come on.
All right, Justice, thanks for joining us as always. Enjoy the rest of PE, whatever it is your business is there today. And yeah, we'll catch you back next week.
Well, thanks, guys. Cheers, guys.
Ciao.
Bye.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
That was the Burning Platform with Justice Malala. We have Donovan Goliath coming in the 8th hour, but after the song, we're going to just catch up on all the big news and get your messages. I promise you, I've not forgotten about your messages. Mm-hmm. We'll be that all in a second. Very nice. Saint Motel is my type.
Download the Touch Central app. Central app from Google Play Store or iTunes Store. Touch Central FM.
If you are messaging us on the app, we do appreciate it. We'll get your message in a second, but we need to get to Mabalima News. Sorry, Mabalima News.
Okay, all right.
Mabalima Law is new.
Okay, all right. So yesterday, a lot of students who, you know, are part of the Fees Must Fall movement rejoiced as their young leader, Mncebo Dlamini, was finally released on bail after having been imprisoned for 3 straight weeks. And the young leader wasted no time, you know, getting back to his role and responsibility. And so the former WITS Student Representative Council President, Mncebo Dlamini, has given the university's Vice Chancellor, Adam Habib, an ultimatum on examinations. Several days ago, the Fees Must Fall movement students filed an urgent court interdict requesting that their exams be postponed to either the end of this year or to early next year, which the court rejected, and the university said exams will go ahead. And so Dlamini was addressing a group of students outside the Palm Ridge Magistrates Court yesterday after being granted 2,000 rand bail. And he has basically given Adam Habib an ultimatum. He said that students need to be given 2 chances to write their final examinations. Dlamini was speaking, saying, "We are saying to Adam Habib that if he wants peaceful examinations for the white minority, he must give us 2 sittings, and that is not negotiable." The arrest of Dlamini has sparked concerns over the last 3 weeks amongst other students who are convinced that the South African police is coming after them. And, you know, exams began in UCT, when was it? Was it last week or earlier this week? And
I think it was last week.
Last week as well, where, you know, they went off without a hitch. And so I suppose people are now kind of nervously looking around to see, you know, what the exam process at WITS University, which for all intents and purposes has been, you know, kind of like the lead institution as far as the Fees Must Fall movement, you know, to see whether or not exams will go smoothly. And judging by Mncebo Dlamini, if they don't get what they want as students, you know, he says that those exams might not go as smoothly as they're hoping for.
Well, now he feels like he's really got some more momentum now after being in prison, obviously. So that's only going to up the ante, so to speak, when it comes to these demands.
Yes, he was apparently also, you know, speaking out against the kind of brutality and the kind of sexual assaults that prisoners face while they're locked up, which we know is a very real problem.
It's prison,
you know,
yeah.
in all prisons the world over. But yes, Dlamini's next court appearance will be on November the 15th at the Johannesburg Magistrates Court. And then we wait and see whether or not the WITS Vice Chancellor Adam Habib responds to Dlamini's request of, you know, them being allowed to have 2 exam sittings.
Never-ending story, this.
You see, the thing is, you know, in the interest of keeping, you know, of keeping in mind the full perspective, you want to get students to write exams as quickly as possible so that they can move on, because then otherwise you're going to be dealing with a backlog of what about all the new incoming students for 2017? If there isn't going to be space for them, you know, it's just going to compound the problem even more. So I don't know, man. I always say I don't know what the solution is for this whole Fees Must Fall movement, but there needs to be a solution. It can't just be, you know, the same rhetoric of I don't care about the students, they can all get fucked. Like, we can't keep saying that as a country anymore.
Yeah, sure. No, there has to be a solution on both sides. But the thing is, it has to be manageable for both sides. It can't just be one side going, it's that.
Yes.
Take it.
Absolutely. Okay, so there are a whole host of Americans who are still in denial about the fact that their new president-elect is Donald Trump. And so throngs of demonstrators have been marching in cities across the United States to protest Trump's victory. Denial is, in fact, one of the stages of the grieving process, right? So they'll need some time before, you know, they go back to just living their ordinary lives. And so in New York City, thousands of protesters filled the streets in Midtown Manhattan as they made their way to Trump Tower, while hundreds more gathered at a Manhattan park shouting, "Not my president."
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
In downtown Chicago, an estimated 1,800 people gathered outside Trump International Hotel and Tower, chanting phrases like, "No Trump, no KKK, no racist USA." The police closed roads in the area, but there were no reports of arrests or violence. And hundreds more have been gathering, you know, in various parts of the United States, Philadelphia, Boston, Seattle, and Portland. I don't know. I'm guessing we'll see these protests, you know, unfold over the next day or two. And then eventually people will have to come to terms with the reality of the situation.
Well, that's just kind of it, right? So people love democracy because they get to choose someone. Okay, so then someone else comes into power, but now they want to fight that. Is it like a touch of double standards there as well?
Well, I don't know, because it's a case of, you know,
I mean, like, Donald didn't steal anything here, right?
No, he didn't.
He might be a dick, but he didn't do anything illegal, so to speak, to become the president.
No, he didn't. But if you didn't vote for Donald Trump, then you are probably disgruntled, you're bitter, you're emotional, you're angry. And so you probably want to protest just to get it out of your system.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Then eventually you'll realize that this is probably a pointless exercise. So,
but like when the Springboks lose, I didn't go to the All Blacks hotel and say, "Screw you guys. You don't deserve to win. You guys aren't my team." Like, go home.
Yeah, but you know, Ben, this is America the Great. And you can do anything in America. I think that's actually in a song by Rihanna. You can do anything at all
in
America.
Rihanna can do anything at all because she's Rihanna.
Yep, so those are your headlines at 7:30 this morning.
All right, well, in crickets, India can't catch the ball, which is a key thing to getting wickets, so they are not taking any. The two gingers, Bairstow and Stokes, are just rattling up the runs here. They really are just scoring at will. 4-2-5 for 5. They're in the 119th over. They're literally just standing and smacking whatever they want. The run rate for the session alone is 4.5. So I think India, well, the best they can do here is maybe scrounge a draw if they can bat just as well. So today, literally now in 5 minutes' time, the Nedbank Golf Challenge starts. Henrik Stenson is the overwhelming favorite to win that one. Yeah, we've got most of the big sort of European stars, of course, in the race to Dubai, which is next weekend's final event. Then, it's going to be something to watch. So 9 South Africans in the field there, so make sure you watch that one. Motorsports, we've got the Brazilian Grand Prix happening this weekend. Lewis Hamilton looking to win that one and hope Rosberg doesn't finish on the podium to keep a slim chance alive that he can maybe get to Abu Dhabi and try and regain his title. But it really is just looking a matter of time until Rosberg wins it. I mean, he literally does have to just win this weekend in Brazil, and it's all done and dusted. This weekend, Australia will host the Proteas again in a test match. Only problem is, it's being played in Hobart, where it rains a shitload. So look for all 5 days to be sort of hampered in one way or another by the elements. Bafana will take on Senegal. That will be at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Lots of World Cup qualifiers taking place and international friendlies. So there'll be no league action this weekend. And it looks like the Box are going to back the bulk. They're going to pick the biggest forward pack they possibly can to try counter the English physically, which is all good and well for about half an hour and during the anthems and all the hiss and stuff. But England will be vastly superior in all aspects and ultimately win by 12 points and up. I think that's a fair assessment. Anyway, those teams will be announced today, so we can get more into that tomorrow. And the international rugby look out for over the weekend, New Zealand will be hammering Italy in a reset match for them. And then Scotland versus Australia, which would be a bit of a grudge sort of rematch, seeing as, Scotland feel really aggrieved that they didn't win their quarterfinal match against Australia last time out in the World Cup. So there'll be a rematch for there. And that's pretty much all the big talking points in your sport at the moment. We can go to a song quickly. And then we're going to come back and just touch on some of the other stories making news and some of your messages as well. A song. Kaizer Chiefs. How about them, huh?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
that'll
Kaizer
work.
Chiefs. Let's go with that. Calvin Harris featuring Haim, Pray to God. Now, aren't Haim like, Taylor Swift's like girl gang groupie group? Michael?
No, don't say it like that. Don't say girl band groupie like they're little cute Powerpuff Girls.
No, but isn't that how it works, Michael? Like Taylor Swift's got like an entourage, right? And they're called Hey.
She's got a girl squad. You know, it comprises of either very hot, sexy models or, you know, just other successful pop stars or athletes. You know, it's kind of like this powerful women conglomerate.
Yeah, but whenever she performs, these Haim people, they open up for her, right? I'm sure like this is how it works.
This is the first time hearing of it.
But no, it just seems strange because now
they're confusing the girl squad with Haim. Aren't Haim an actual band?
Yes, but they're part of her girl squad, but they're so girl squaddy they actually open up for her on tour and stuff.
Okay, well maybe then I'm the confused one.
Well, I don't know. I pick up things like from time to time because I hear everything.
The band consists of sisters. They're a pop rock band from LA.
And Taylor Swift's basically their sugar mama.
No, I see nothing about Taylor Swift.
Well, keep digging, Michael. Keep digging in the story here because they're collaborating with Calvin Harris, ex-boyfriend Calvin Harris. Anyways, get some messages. Martha says, sorry, cough.
Yeah.
Martha says, hi, Mavali and Ben. Read the US election of protest. People are angry because Trump lost the actual vote count, but because of their electoral college system won the election.
But is there anything that can be done about that? Because if that's how America has built their system, then that's how the system works.
Yeah, Martha, it's a good point. And people obviously will feel kind of outraged. But as Trevor Noah pointed out, that's how it works.
That's how they operate.
So again, it's like saying, well, the Springboks got more penalties than the All Blacks, but the All Blacks scored tries, and tries count more points.
Although, you know what, Martha? I hear you, because it's kind of like we here in South Africa when we complain about the fact that we don't actually get to elect our president. We elect a party, and then they then go off into a room behind closed doors,
and
they huddle up together by themselves, and then they elect our president. So actually, Martha, you know what? I hear you. I hear where the frustration is coming from.
That's right. You're right.
They're angry about the system. I get it.
Yeah. Casey says, so if you basically need to know the future, watch The Simpsons. And it really is. You must actually go online and just say, type in Simpsons predictions. There is so many articles of the fact that these guys have done it. There was this one episode where this farmer, Homer becomes a farmer, right?
Because of course.
Because he wants to combine tomatoes and chewing tobacco. So he makes tomacos.
Of course.
A farmer in real life fused tobacco plants with tomatoes and actually created
a tomaco. Wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. Tembiani says, Mabali Ben and Justice, it's really simple. People don't like foreigners. Donald Trump and Brexit happened because of xenophobia. Even here in SA, people need a politician that will say, protect our borders, and people will vote for that person. It's so true. Like Donald is a product of popular opinion, basically. He doesn't have any concepts or strategy of his own. He's just a mouthpiece for what's going on in irate people's heads.
You know, Tembeni, that is such a good point. You know, it's very easy for us to be critical of, you know, the alleged bigotry by Americans when it comes to foreigners. And yet here at home, we know very well of, you know, how appalling some of our behavior has been with regards to xenophobic incidents in this country. So good point, well made.
Yeah. Quinton from Namibia was saying yesterday he was listening to the third hour of the podcast and he was quite disturbed that none of us are keen to go to Namibia when South Africa turns to shit.
Oh, yes, of course, Quinton. No, me, I'm there. Just as long as, you know, you can find me like a room. Me, I'm going to Namibia.
Okay. Well, he says Namibia is a great country, a lot less corruption, no war, great landscape, good people. So screw you guys. Namibia won't take you in now. Ah. We'll build a wall next to the Aranya River.
Damn it.
Quinton, okay, you know what? I think if you could sell it better to us, because I think Botswana might be just ahead of you. Because, you know, we've got O'Neill as our contact there. So you're our contact in Namibia. Mm. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, I did bring it up. I need credit for that at least. You got to give me credit where credit's due here.
And Quentin sent you sand from Namibia. So how dare you, Ben?
Quentin, we've actually got a piece of your country right here in the studio. It's not a very nice piece, but there it is. Kevin was saying that, is that why Cape Townians are so smug about the flood story from earlier? Because they've got a mountain as their higher ground? No, Kevin, I think they're just smug genetically. I think that's just how it works. And then it also says there's loads of interviews on ABC being posted and streamed live, and how credible are they really? It's a good question, Kevin, because I think with all the hoopla and hype and just madness around these things. People are trying to get quotes out and trying to say very salacious things to get click baits and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's okay. It really is just, it's an uneasy time right now in the world, I guess. So getting back to that list of Americans that are deciding to leave, right?
Yeah.
So just to kind of give you a snapshot so far: John Stewart, Chelsea Handler, Miley Cyrus, Neve Campbell, Lena Dunham, Sher, and Al Sharpton. Okay, so they've all decided that if Trump was to win the elections, they're all going to leave America. So let's just carry on with that list. Spike Lee, the director, he's also quite keen to go. Barbara Streisand.
I remember Barbara Streisand.
She was very outspoken.
Yeah,
here.
She was.
Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
She's a comedian.
Yes.
So apparently, according to Avi, you know Avi's our American guy on the ground.
Isn't he?
Well, he's an African guy, but in America.
Isn't he also in New York, or is he somewhere else?
Yeah, he lives and works there, but he's always traveling by the sounds of things. Avi's saying that Amy Schumer said that she didn't want to leave US, and she now says that people are being bigots for following up on this with her.
You know, there's a love-hate relationship with Amy Schumer and what's that other comedian's name? You mentioned her, the one who created Girls. Like, there are a lot of people who don't like those two.
Oh, right.
Lena Dunham.
Lena Dunham.
Amy Schumer and Lena. Like, there are a lot of people who love to pile in on those two because they don't like them for the things that they say or for their comedy or whatever. So yeah,
the general feeling is that Amy Schumer is not funny. People always go on about the fact that she's a not funny comedian.
That's the thing. People always say that she's not funny.
It's like Hillary was crooked. Once that stuck, that was it. No matter what she did, it's like no matter what Amy Schumer does, she's just not funny.
Yeah.
So more on that list. Actor Bryan Cranston. You know who he is?
No.
Breaking Bad.
The main guy.
Yeah.
The old guy.
The main old dude there.
Okay.
Okay, so he also, I would definitely move. It's not real to me that would happen. I hope God it won't. Yeah. Whoopi Goldberg, maybe it's time for me to move, you know. I can afford to go.
Okay,
all
Whoopi.
Right, Whoopi. Sister Act,
Whoopi,
wasn't that
just
good?
Just don't come onto the continent because, you know, there are a lot of South Africans who have been making it very clear on Twitter that they don't want any Americans coming here.
Also, Whoopi still doesn't seem to have eyebrows. You can't trust people with no eyebrows.
Why not?
I don't know. She's always had that aura about her.
Does she have no eyebrows, or is it a case of, you know, having painted them on or drawn them on with...
Just get the impression she has none.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, some countries might have a criteria, Whoopi, is all I'm saying. Raven Simone, she's a TV host, and she's going to move to Canada, she says. George Lopez. Now, he looks Mexican.
He is Mexican.
George Lopez says, if he wins, he won't have to worry about immigration. We'll all go back.
Okay, that's funny.
Natasha Leone. Any guesses?
She sounds like
she's
a
pop actress.
Star. Okay.
Yeah, she's an actress. And then, of course, Samuel L. Jackson. He said he was going to move his black ass back to Africa.
Right.
Sorry, I'm moving my black ass to South Africa.
Yeah.
I sent him a tweet yesterday, you know, just being courteous, being South African and all.
Very nice of you, Ben.
And
what did you say?
I said, you know, Johannesburg's probably a very good place for you to move. There's lots of golf courses. He loves playing golf.
Mm.
And the weather's really good.
Mm.
It's a good base. And if he wants to go somewhere else, you know, it's a short flight.
So you would be happy to have Samuel L. Jackson come here?
Yeah, I mean, look, Justice is giving us the boot by looks of things. He might be the next burning platform. Who knows? The burning platform was Samuel L. Jackson.
But do you think a lot of these Americans who would consider coming here, I mean, I'm guessing they in their minds, they're thinking of Cape Town. Because I don't know that a whole lot of them know much about the rest of the country. You know, Americans know Cape Town.
I don't think they're going to take a chance in Mtata or Beaufort West.
Or the Free State. Or,
you know, Welkom.
Yeah.
So it probably will be, you know, everyone wants to go to Cape Town.
Yeah.
That's not Africa, Samuel.
No, it's
so
not.
So you need to come here to Joburg.
It is literally not a part of the country.
Exactly. So those are all your... Those are all the Americans who were, quite keen to up and leave. Whether they will, I'd love to see this list in a year's time. I bet you none of them will ever leave.
None of them will leave.
Of course not.
No.
Now they're just all backtracking and hope that someone just forget about stuff like this.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got Donovan Goliath. He'll be in here shortly for the 8-hour interview. And we've got some more stories. Plus, I've got the thing that's really, for me, the biggest story in the world right now. And it's invoking demons out of me now. I'm getting so fired up and angry. I've actually tried to prolong it so I don't get too angry and then we run out of time.
So I'm guessing that this is obviously a bigger deal to you than the American election.
Yeah. Well, I don't think just for me, Mavs. I think for the world in general, this could be... Well, look, it's just catastrophic. So we'll get into that. Donovan Goliath all coming up very, very shortly. CliffCentral.com